Hello, everybody, and welcome to the ROI podcast. I'm your host, Rich Fernandez from SIY Global. And I am really thrilled today to have Nicole Bradford with us, who is an incredible innovator and thought leader, practice leader, investor, researcher. There are so many things to say about Nicole. Really in the space of artificial intelligence and human interaction. In fact, she holds a role as executive in residence at the Society for Human Resources Management in AI and human interaction. Nicole has a long history of working in transformative technology that really focuses on human flourishing. Nicole, you're a co-founder and partner at Neuremia Collective, early stage venture that focuses on human wellness technologies. I met you through the Transformative Technology Conference and transformativetech.org, which you're a co-founder of. And just for the audience, because they don't know you, but I know that you were a senior executive in interactive entertainment prior to all of that. Working for companies such as Epic Games, Activision Blizzard, Vivendi, Disney. So, and you've also covered a span of roles, right? From strategy to operations to marketing to production. So you've kind of seen all ends of kind of the tech space. Finally, of course, you're a faculty at Singularity University, a trustee of California Institute of Integral Studies, and adjunct faculty and lecturer at Stanford. So we're just thrilled to have you here with us today and all of the expertise you're bringing. So Nicole, welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a little while. You know, I think I first met you at an event that did focus on transformative technology. And just so for the audience to help get their head around that, how would you describe transformative technology kind of in a very basic way?
Yeah, I mean, the transformative part of that comes from the idea of human transformation. The idea of a human being becoming happier and healthier and more fulfilled. And what is that process? So specifically what transformative tech is think of it as technology that strengthens what I call the human mesh. So mental, emotional, social health, and human performance. So MESH. So technology for the human mesh. And so that could look like technology to help with mental health, emotional health, social health. It could look like your Oura Ring, because if you can't sleep, you can't be well, as well as all of the, you know, mental health platforms that are starting to come out. So it's a broad definition. But the journey to one's flourishing and fulfilling one's human potential is actually an act of transformation, a process of transformation for which there is a role that technology can play. And that's what transformative tech is.
Great. That is super clear. Thank you. I really appreciate that way to describe it. And if we can, I feel like we just jumped right in, you know, like, hi, how you doing? You're good. Where are you? All that stuff. We probably have that covered. you know, there's so much to say about this. I think it's just exciting to dive in. So sorry, I just went straight there. But it's great. You know, and the role that technology has to play is one of the things you said in the human transformation. Going forward, where do you see the opportunities? And then where do you see the risks?
Well, just to give a little background, when I got into transformative tech, one of my early premises was that it wasn't necessarily that tech is bad. It was that it's not good enough. It's just not good enough. You know, like these flat screens are not good enough, you know, and it was really a calling to say we need to build the tech that actually is what we need to support our growth and development. So humanity can get on the same page, you know, so we can, you know, address our traumas, our collective traumas and individual traumas, get on the same page, get the behaviors and the practices that raise our capacity for emotional and mental health, those types of things. So I consider all of the people who are working on the betterment of technology from the Center for Humane Technology and the work that they did on social media and what they're doing on AI. And like, I consider us all on the same team. So they're over there, you know, fighting the good fight on making sure that the harms are addressed. I think there's going to be, you know, especially around like bio and neuro data, and there's some significant things of which there'll be a combination of like regulatory and some other things. My focus is on, you know, knowing that those people are doing that. And then also a little bit later, I'll tell you how I advise founders and companies to be ready for the moment. But, you know, the interesting question is like, how do we really use it? So where I think the opportunity is and what I think is next is how do we leverage technology for human beings to collaborate more deeply together? And there's some interesting things that, you know, are really only possible now and very relevant for enterprises and teams that technology is enabling that we're just at the very beginnings of around collaboration, because email is not collaboration. No. And neither is Slack. Yeah. You know, like, it's not. It's basically like smoke signals. You know, like I'm over here saying, hey, Rich, but I'm just doing it at my computer and like sending you tons of stuff. Like really deep human collaboration. How do you have the wisdom of, you know, how could an organization, a 500-person organization, really get the wisdom of those 500 extraordinary people, but with the quality and density of, you know, 5-person deliberations, you know, because any meeting that's got more than 5 people is not a meeting. You know, it's a, you know, it's something else useful, you know, for its purpose, but not where you're going to get like the deep thought. So I think the real opportunity is around human collaboration, human collective intelligence, and then, you know, where the mesh supports that is that, you know, think about the number of times you've been in a meeting and there's, you know, an argument over the budget, but it's not really about the budget. It's like thinly veiled mommy daddy issues, you know, between people, you know, yeah. It's not about the budget. And so, you know, when we think about, you know, as humans, we have some very real problems to solve. We need to solve climate change. We need to address income inequality. We need to understand the future of work. We have to redesign work, reinvent workforce, you know, all of these things, like they're tricky, complex problems. And we have to be able to collaborate and communicate and trust one another. It's my opinion that you have to have a strong mesh to be a real leader in doing that.
And remember, again, the mesh is the acronym for, again, you said it earlier,
mental, emotional, social health, and human performance.
Love it. Yeah. And all of those are interconnected. You know, you really can't have necessarily one without the other. And technology has a perhaps an important role to play in that. I know that that is one of your operating principles for everything you do. The technology actually does have a role to play in human thriving.
Well, it's also, it's like we're so... You know, one of the things that I think people do is there is this implicit assumption out there that humans are the best they will ever be. Because when people are talking about harms, they always talk about the lowest common denominator. And yes, that is true, but it's not the best that we'll ever be. I think a really great example is that today, you know, the bulk of the world believes that slavery is wrong. Yeah, there's still 100 million people who are being trafficked, and that's a problem. But if you go back 1,000 years, you know, slavery is pretty common, and most people thought it was, most societies, you know, it was integral. And so
people today, we're in a better place than we've ever been. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we definitely are in a better place than we've ever been. Like the, you know, the U.S. murder rate is the lowest it's been in 7 years, you know, and so we're in a better place. But the thing is it's sort of like the point I wanted to make is that, you know, we're really clever and we're really curious. And so, you know, we have to point our curiosity towards building the things that help us become better, building the things that help us, you know, think differently, think together, and continue to, you know, evolve. Like the concept of a liberal democracy is a new thing, you know, and we came up with that. So, you know, so it's just this thing that if we have the belief that technology can play a role in helping strengthen the mesh and enhancing collaboration and connection so that we can solve the biggest problems that are facing us in the world and also in organizations, you know, we can iterate towards understanding and developing what those things are. But first, we have to believe it and point our curiosity that way.
Right. Because it's, and what I heard you say is that, because the technology is not good enough at this stage, right? Not that it's not bad, it's just that it's not good enough. And there's so much more to go to be able to harness these capabilities towards mental, emotional, social health, the mesh, as you say, for human performance and thriving. So in that regard, one of the really interesting things that I know you're doing is that you are an executive in residence at the Society for Human Resources, specifically with a focus on AI and human interaction and the possibilities that that creates. So can you tell us about that work and some of the things that you're seeing emerge as you dive into that domain?
Absolutely. I am so excited to be working with SHRM. It's an organization that has 340,000 members who touch 325 million workers and their families every Monday. So, you know, as an investor in technology, I see a lot of decks with TAMs, total addressable markets, in it, where a young company, I do pre-seed and seed, hopes to reach that kind of amount of people. And often it doesn't happen because, you know, starting a tech company is actually really, really hard. And so it's just beautiful to be working with a really thoughtful, extraordinary global organization that is actually embedded in the lives of 325 million workers and their families every Monday. So I love that work. How this came to be is that, so I've been in tech for 20 years. And the first 10 have been in consumer-facing software, and that's the game stuff that you talked about. And I oversaw one of the things I'm most known for was being the head of operations for Blizzard Entertainment for China. And so I oversaw the back end and the platform, which meant, you know, almost everybody on my team was technical in some way or supporting the technology in some way. So I'm not an engineer. But I spent a lot of time, you know, learning how to understand what I'm looking at and how to empower technical people to, you know, be their best selves and get the obstacles out of their way so they could be in their genius and for that to come through what they were building. And so 10 years in pure tech and then, or consumer-facing tech, pure tech, and then I went on a meditation retreat, which is, you know, you and I share a love of meditation, and I had a really powerful experience, which included, having such a strong experience that, you know, prior to that, I would have to say I felt very lonely. And then after that, I felt very connected. And so I wanted to really bring that to everyone, because, you know, I have a very democratic orientation, by the way, to technology because my dad was a plumber, you know, like, so I'm from the middle of nowhere, right? And, you know, when you go on a retreat, if it's, you know, most of the world is working. And so it's a very special experience to be able to go on a retreat. But the thing that technology can do is it makes everything affordable, accessible, and available. It has that ability to take all the good stuff and put it, you know, in the hands and have access to for everyone. Now we have to do that intentionally and we have to you know, we have to be mindful and responsible, and we have to have, you know, non-predatory business models and a bunch of things like that. But technology is the only thing that can do that. So my very first, you know, thing was, you know, technology for the mesh. That in itself is human potential. So how I came together with SHRM is about, you know, mid-year last year, I was introduced to the CEO, Johnny Taylor Jr. And it was at that time that SHRM was saying, you know, this is going to change everything. It's going to change work. And we want to get ahead of how we think about, you know, the intersection of technology and humans inside of organizations. And so what I'm doing with them is, you know, and all of my work, you know, like all of my work is at this intersection. So, you know, many pure AI people haven't spent as much time really focused on people, because the point of my technology, and by the way, also, you know, one of the big games that I worked on, World of Warcraft, was basically an online community where people also play games. You know, like 40 yeah. people would go on a grand adventure together. Yes. It was really...
I have a teenage son. I know.
Oh, totally.
Yes. He's been up into that for ages. Yeah.
Yeah. People don't play games alone. You know, people think they do. They don't. They play in community. And so my work has always been around the intersection of humans and technology for the purpose of enhancing the human experience. And so traditional AI people don't necessarily do that. And many people who are traditional HR people, you know, they haven't spent 20 years in tech. And so that combination actually makes me one of the few people who's like really been at the intersection of that. And, you know, what I love about SHRM and the role of HR is that HR people are essentially the circulatory system of an organization. They have their pulse on, they have horizontal and vertical relationships. They understand what's going on. And, you know, and I really believe that they're the key to be able to bring in, you know, human-centered AI implementations that unlock the power of people to move the world forward.
Tell us more about that, because I think that's the crux, right? So when we talk about AI and human potential, what are we talking about? Because the flip, you know, you're hearing a lot of people, the AI apocalypse, right? Like it's going to take all these jobs and so forth. And that's a whole other area to investigate. But in terms of the capability of AI to facilitate human collaboration and, you know, connection, what are you seeing emerge for people in organizations with regard to this?
Well, so it's really interesting. And so, you know, there's multiple types of AI. There's the, you know, RPA, which is sort of like the early automation robotics. Then there is the predictive AI, which is like that deep machine learning that's been going on for a while. And then there's conversational AI, and then there's generative AI. And they're all in some ways the same, or they have things in common, and then they have some very different things. And so, you know, the previous versions were usually behind the scenes, you know, so you or I couldn't, you know, sit down at our desk at whatever company we work at and start to have it do work for us. Now, people have been touching AI all the time. Like if you've got Siri on your phone and Alexa in your house, and if you're watching Netflix, you've been immersed in AI. So we all have been immersed for like 15 mm-hmm. years, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's baked. It's baked in, to your point, right? Like we don't realize we're not actually prompting it and directing it as much. I mean, you know, it's kind of reading us and it's been programmed to do that, but we're not interacting as much. Now it's sort of disintermediation, as they say. There's another round of disintermediation almost, right? Where we're right there at the coal face, as they used to say in an old mining paradigm, right? Working it.
Well, now you can have it do work for you. And you can iterate that work very quickly and direct it and shape it. And coming up soon, you'll have an agent that will do multiple things for you and do different processes for you. So it's, you know, it's going to get, you know, even more powerful for what it can do for you, Rich Fernandez, as an individual, for you, Rich Fernandez, as a team lead. And then, you know, what you're going to see in organizations is you're going to see a combination of all four types of AI. Like the truly, you know, the companies that really reinvent themselves and are truly transformative, they're going to use all of it to complement one another for different things. So that's one thing. But, you know, I think the, you know, the important thing to note is that on the generative side, we're still figuring out how it actually reinvents work, workforce and workflows, you know, but I think there's a lot to learn from all the previous implementations. You know, depending on who you talk to, 50 to 80% of machine learning, predictive, RPA, you know, all of that stuff failed. You know, and in the society of like data scientists, 80% of models are never deployed. So there's a lot of failure. So it's worth looking at what causes success. And so the things that cause success are three things: a catalyzing leader, you know, a business orientation, and I'll explain that in a second. And the third part is change management, you know, like old fashioned. Well, the part about buy-in and empathy and conversation, getting feedback from the organization. And so like those are the three things that success has in common. And so, you know, so it's very human-centered. And, you know, we're going into a place where the world is moving so fast, you know, like, you know, companies are not rewarded just for efficiency anymore. Like if you look at the, you know, the Magnificent Seven, Magnificent Five, what they're being rewarded for is growth. And so a lot of times when people look at these technologies, they're thinking about it purely in terms of efficiency or productivity, like do more emails faster, versus, and this gets to your question, I think the real opportunity is to step back and say, you know, how can everyone on your team spend more time, you know, at the top of their game? How can they spend more time in their genius doing that? And what does that look like? So, you know, there was a study I saw a little while ago where nurses, you know, their own self-evaluation, they've felt like in this particular survey, they felt like they spent 70% of their time doing paperwork and stuff like that, and 30% of the time, you know, at the top of their game doing the thing that, you know, you really want a nurse, that you really want him or her to do.
Can I ask you then, is the thrust of this that AI will kind of take care of the routinized kind of work tasks, workflows, and we can sort of be freed up to do kind of more of our superpower, our higher order, you know, strengths and be our best? Is that part of the thrust of what you're
saying? I think that's what the winners will do.
Mm-hmm. Can AI also edge into that space where, you know, like I have some friends that are therapists, right? And some of the talk I hear from them is, AI is just going to replace us because it's going to get to know you so well that it'll be able to, you know, index its massive catalog of all therapeutic interventions and spit out something that's fairly personalized for you. That, and, you know, I don't know the answer to that question because the technology could be that powerful, but do we think it's that impactful?
I think that AI will have perfect answers, you know, completely matched for you. But I don't know how satisfying that will be for you. So technology is relatively new. Biology is ancient. you know, and there's a lot more that goes on. Like right now I'm like, I don't know, I'm obsessed with gut biome and microbes and the microbiome, you know, and like couples colonize one another. Did you know that?
Now that I did not know, but it makes sense. It makes sense.
And there was a study that was done at this Israeli sort of lab university, and they like watched people go to conferences, and within about a half an hour after someone shakes someone's hand, they touch their nose and mouth. But they don't do it if they haven't. They don't do it if they haven't. And so some of the thinking is that like our bodies are collecting microbes. You know, we need microbes. You know, there's, you know, several processes in your body that require microbes. There's things that we don't make and we can't eat. And microbes are required. So, you know, we don't completely understand the processes of life. And our bodies, I think, are very integrated into that. And so, yes, can there was a study where, you know, they gave therapy answers to a two people, and they said, which one do you like better? And they liked the AI ones better until they said, oh, this one's from an AI. And the people were like, well, I want the perfectly imperfect one. You know, it's like we really like we have, you know, very ancient biology that is about us being together, about us wanting to be together. You know, your mirror neurons are all pointed towards what is happening in that other human being. And, you know, I think that for that to really, and this is just a guess, but I think for that to kick in for AI, the AI is going to need a body. And once it has a body, well, you know, is it really AI? You know, like once it's got microbes and germs and everything.
Yeah, and we're the Borg, right?
Like, you know, like what is it really, you know? So, but that's a long time between now and then, but I just like, I'm not ready to give up on humans. And
right. That's
why I think the collective intelligence is really important, because we're still not on the same page. Like people talk about values alignment, you know, human aligned values. It's like, well, we're not aligned. So I think that's a step.
It's a step. And then there does seem to be, you know, some of the research may bear this out, what you're citing here, but also there appears to be something unique and irreplaceable about our human interaction and our human capabilities that I don't think can ever be fully reducible to, you know, a trained AI. Again, that's just a little bit of a hypothesis on my part. Where do you come out on that? So what I'm saying is human interaction, these capabilities we have, the way they show up in organizations, in relationships, in therapy, whatever the venue may be, there are aspects of it that are unique and irreplaceable. And so AI won't sort of take over everything.
You know, there's another layer to that, which is sort of like, can it? And is that satisfying to you? You know, like one of the things that will happen is that by this time next year, or by the end of next year, I would say probably everything you see online is going to be, almost everything will be generated or in whole or in part. Today, the estimates are that half of the traffic on the internet is bot traffic, depending on who you talk to. You know, and especially now once agents come online and you can send your agent out to do all of your, you know, price comparison and everything, it's like almost everything's going to be generated. A ton of traffic's going to be bot traffic. We're going to be, you know, searching by asking questions versus, you know, restaurant near me. We're not going to do that. And so, you know, what that means is that, you know, curation is going to be very important. What you'll find is you're going to be interested in what, you know, someone you know has to say, you know, and the things that they bring to you, which might be generated or not. And so, you know, human, like a part of our biology from our hunter-gatherer time periods is that we're sort of prone to look for novelty, to look for what's interesting, to look for what stands out. And if you've already noticed that you're starting to get a little bored when you're reading things, you know, like, it's the early stage of that. Because, like, you know, like, people talk about deepfakes and you know, everybody using generators in their own voice. But the thing, someone said something, Ethan Mollick said something really funny that I thought was great, which basically was, when you use, if you train an AI in your voice, a generative AI, because they aggregate and then predict, what it will create is not your best writing and not your worst writing, but it's going to create your mediocre writing.
Yeah, regression to the mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And so imagine an internet where everything is not bad, but it is indeed mediocre.
Right. So here's the thing. What do we have to, maybe I'll, because I'm aware that we've been talking for a while. And,
totally, you
know,
really good.
I'll keep going because this is fascinating. You know, there's so much to talk about here, Nicole. And it's great talking about with you too, because again, you bring that lens of human flourishing together with, you know, the deep technology. But maybe here's the question for you. What do we have to learn? Our audience perhaps are largely learning and development practitioners. So we're professionals who think about learning and education, you know, for humans, for adults especially. What do we have to learn in this brave new world?
Yeah. The most important thing really is, cultivating in yourself, in your family, in your organization, an agile, curious mindset. And, you know, the ability to ask questions and the commitment to think for yourself. The reason why is that it's too easy to generate, and it sort of loses that, like, you lose the sort of, like, thoughtness. I just made up a word. And so, what does higher education look like? There's a great university called Minerva where their pedagogy is based on the Socratic method and the ability to ask questions and think. So as a learning and development leader in an organization, you want to, you know, hire for or cultivate or, you know, reward and spark, agility, curiosity, collaboration, adaptability, because that's what's going to happen. In addition, a basic thing that everyone should know how to do is that, or understand, the way you should think about AI and where it's going, is think about it like electricity. Think about it like as your organizational infrastructure, kind of the way that roads and highways are infrastructure in a country. And think about having a basic understanding of AI as, knowing how to read. Like just a basic one, just like knowing how to read. And then from an organizational standpoint, how do you cultivate that from a learning and development standpoint? One, you have to, do awareness, and then you have to do exposure. The exposure leads to curiosity. The curiosity leads to experimentation. You have to think through how you want to manage the experimentation. Do you want to have a brand, a walled garden system? Probably a good idea to support the the experimentation. Then you want to sort of like stack your experiments so that you actually create value for the organization. You want to get that institutional learning that raises the waterline for your organization. You want to understand historically what has made AI implementations fail and what has made them succeed. And then also what's unique about generative AI, because you can be a part of that process. Because, the real like goal or the real win, here's what the winners will do. The winners will think of AI and find a way for AI to help them grow. And they will grow because they are empowering their people to spend more time at the top of their game. And they will create a change management process that allows where the people help them with that reimagination in a way that serves the business. That's what the winners will do. So the L&D people are essential to this process because they're the ones who help retain capture and retain firm knowledge. And firm knowledge is critical for AI maturity.
And what do we win?
What do you win?
Like, what are they winning? What does winning mean in this?
Well, I mean, success is different for every company, whether it's, you know, market share or, you know, all of those things. But I think the most important thing is, do you truly serve your clients? You know, you like the word clients over users, because I think users cultivates the wrong relationship with people. But it's like, do the people who use your products, do they love you? Do they trust you? Do you make their lives and businesses better, you know, in a meaningful way?
Can I challenge you for a second on that? Because I want to suggest that it's sort of like Plato's cave, right? Because the person who said, oh, that person who stepped out of the cave and said there's this land of sunshine and like a big, vast world out there are crazy. That was a trusted leader. And that's why everyone stayed in the cave, right? And so I want to make sure, I want to encourage us, and I don't know what you think of this, but I want to encourage us to think about, I kind of know what you think about this. That's why I wanted to talk to you about this, which is that in the service of kind of the betterment of the world, right? It's not just about the market share, of course, and those things, but it's about this kind of broader remit that it can also help us. Like you said, be the top of our game so we can be the best as collectively as a species and the best as a planetary health perspective.
Right. I think collectively, absolutely. And also people vote with their values around products. Like that's already starting to happen, you know? And so, you know, as technology starts to make it easier and easier for people to start things, you know, old incumbents are going to be really challenged by upstarts that completely align with the values of consumers. Also, the other thing that's happening that many people are not tracking, like if you're looking long term, is that we're at 8 billion people. We're going to go up to 10 billion, and then there's going to be a massive population decline. You know, and it just has to do with how many people have how many children, you know, regardless of what happens with climate, that is just like, that's just what the numbers are now. And there's really no way to change it. And so, you know, sort of what that means is that, you know, loyalty or brand appreciation, alignment, how are you serving the world? What are you doing? What are you contributing to? You know, every human being, I think, you know, what I really hope for is we get to the place where we understand that every human is precious, you know, like every human is precious. And, you know, and then how does the technology allow that? You know, one of my, so in my fund, our investors are Japanese. Two of our big anchors are Japanese. So I spent a lot of time in Japan or talking to people in Japan, and they're, they now sell more adult diapers than baby diapers. And the median age is 50. And it's interesting, you would think for mesh technology, they would be the most focused on, okay, how do we support such an elder population when, you know, the population pyramid is inverted? And they absolutely are thinking that. And also, they're like, our young people have to flourish. They have to flourish. You know, they have to become their best selves. They have to flourish. They have to be empowered. How do we use this technology to allow those young people, you know, to be and do everything? Because they're thinking, you know, the one of the beautiful things about Japan is they think very long term, you know? And so they're like, they're, you know, weighing with these questions. And so, you know, that's going to happen to every country in the world. You know, I think it's 2050, there's only going to be 4 countries in the world that do not have an inverted population pyramid. And there's 4 countries in Africa. And that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the wider question. So how do you win? So there certainly is like the interim, how does a company win? or how does a, you know, how does a team win? But then there's a longer thing about like, how does humanity win? And how does technology allow us and support us in doing that, in creating a world, you know, that is, you know, better for all.
And we can vote with our values. I love that. So maybe we'll leave it at that, Nicole. So much to explore more, but we've already said a lot, and hopefully this was really impactful for the audience. I know for me, I just appreciate your very deep and also broad perspective. So thank you. And thank you for continuing to do the work you do in the world of really seeking ways for technology to help us flourish. It's needed because it's not good enough, as you say, and it could be way better. And we can continue to grow and be better. So thank you for being a champion for that, Nicole.
My pleasure. And then, you know, pretty shortly with Sherm, we're going to be releasing white papers on maturity models and AI implementation processes that are very human-centered. Everybody look out for those.
All right. We will do that. Nicole, thank you so much. You could find Nicole online and on her website as well and learn a little bit more about her at NicoleBradford.com. And onward and deeper we go. So thanks. Thank you so much, Nicole.